I want to do one more shiur about the Hidurim of Batim. Last week we spent a lot of time about the way the parashios are written, or the way they're written, the spacing. We spoke about the Hidurim, the various Hidurim that can be applied to the writing of the parashios. And now let's discuss some of the Hidurim that can be found in regard to the Batim. Okay, Batim is a big, big industry. There are many people who make Batim. So in the here, everything I'm telling you here comes from the Sefer Inside Stam by Harav Ruvein Mendelwitz. It's a fantastic Mendelwitz. It's a fantastic, fantastic Sefer. He has all of the cutting edge issues that are you're not going to find in Shulchan Aruch. Everything this is what's going on in the industry today. These are the cutting edge issues. Issue number one. Okay, Batim. Okay, today Baruch Hashem we all have what's called Gassos. Batim today all made from the hide of a behema gasa, which means a large animal.
A cow.
These are, years ago, probably our great-great-great-grandparents, they did not know from these type of tool. They were from behema dakas, from small animals, from sheep, goats, which the batim was very, very thin. It was easier to make, but the quality was far from what it is today, and it did not last very long. You probably had to replace your batim every couple of years, because since they were made from the hides of such small animals, they would fall apart, they would crack, and they would go out of shape, and it would not be perfectly square, and so on and so forth. So we used to see the hides of behema gasa, which will last a lifetime, last many lifetimes. Now, what are the issues? The issues are, can they be made? The most important thing about a bias is it has to be halacha l'mashmah, it has to be perfectly square. Shalyad is not so complicated, because a shalyad is just one compartment. So we make the one compartment perfectly square, it's pressed into a perfect shape. Shalrosh is more difficult, because the shalrosh has to be pressed in a way where you have four compartments, and those four compartments have to be pressed together to form a perfect square. A lot of calculation has to go into the process that when you start off with a big massive piece of hide and you start folding it and pressing it and putting it in machines, that the final result will be something that is perfectly square. This requires a lot of effort, a lot of toil, a lot of work, and it can be done. And in fact, through a computer, through the technology exists, that you through a computer, through a machine, it can be done perfectly, very quickly. The only problem is, Shaila is a halacha that it should be done biyat, just like when it comes to cloth, comes to parchment. There's halacha, avodas yad. This goes back to the big issue of Rabbi Cohn. When he was here, he said he alluded to this, is the big issue when it comes to matzah. Machine-made matzah versus handmade matzah. And the mile of machine-made matzah is that when you're doing it, you're doing l'shem, matzah is mitzvah. You're doing it, it has to be made l'shma. There is a halacha, l'mantia taras Hashem beficha, that tefillin, every part of the tefillin process must be made l'shma. Tefillin shir, a halacha very similar to matzah. Matzah has to be made l'shem matzah is mitzvah. Likewise, tefillin must be made l'shem tefillin. So what part of the process can we leave to a machine, and what part of the process can be done by, must be done by hand? So b'di'evet, not a b'di'evet, it's a l'chatchila. Most people, 90% of Chachamim Yisrael has no problem eating machine matzah, as far as I know. Okay, machine matzah, it can be made l'shma. You press the button, and the process begin the Shmei L'shma. So to all the parts of making tefillin, and making especially the part that has to be perfectly square, and making the shin, all of these things can be done. I mean, I shouldn't say they have to be careful with the shin, but things that making the batim perfectly square, that's really the main part. This idea of making the batim perfectly square, can it be done by machine? Should it be done by a person? You say before you start the machine, you say l'shem mitzvahs tefillin. The ritzuos, the blackening. You must. If you don't, until not l'shem. But that's not enough. Before you actually make it black, you have to say l'shem mitzvahs tefillin on the pen. Because if you don't say l'shem mitzvahs tefillin, you can be out $45 to $75. That can make the ritzuos possible, according to some opinions. It's a very big problem. What?
So it could be more than
$75 already. Why? What? $100 for ritzuos?
For seven ritzuos.
That's over the top.
Savings.
Okay.
From China.
Did you see the toy tefillin? The children's toy tefillin? They're unbelievable.
What?
They are so realistic. They are so real. It's scary. You can fool anyone. It's made out of plastic. You can't tell the difference. And the ritzus, I like that instead of Velcro, it goes around, and the leather is soft. They really, if the Torah was given in the 21st century, they would have made the tefillin just like the toy tefillin. It's a very popular toy for children. The toy tefillin. Okay, let's go further. The girls also wear it. Okay, let's go further. So this is the big issue. The big issue is halacha l'moshe Sinai, the tefillin must be perfectly square, and tefillin require lishma. No one disagrees with that fact that it requires lishma. And matzah, the example we're giving is matzah. Matzah requires lishma. Matzah, there's a big, very debate. Can a machine make matzah lishma? So we hold it yes. You press the button and you start the process. Today they do all these chumras where you participate to some degree with the machine, but basically the answer is yes, but of course it's a nice hiddur, something you can charge more money if you do the process by hand. So this is the first big issue, the difference between the cost of batim. The batim that are made, the ribua, is made completely by a machine. They basically, I don't know the process, but they put it into a machine, and the machine does everything. The machine completely, of course the person that's working with the batim, but there is a heavy reliance upon electricity, upon precision that's been done by a machine to make the batim perfectly square. It doesn't always come out perfectly square. There has to be quality control. You have to be very careful there are different chumras of how square it has to be. Halacha b'diavad, no one, if it looks square to you, to the naked eye, it's kosher. You want to start measuring with very precise instruments.
The biggest problem with the batim. You need tremendous amount of pressure.
Oh, okay, that's why you need machines.
So what they're saying,
thousands of pounds of pressure need
right,
to be applied.
The old method was you had a
person that's working.
Now you have hydraulics.
You have hydraulics. So hydraulics, this is the question, is it lishma? Do you have the full hither of lishma?
Hydraulics is still not electronic.
No, what they do is you have a motor that pushes the piston.
Okay, but it's not being done purely by man. Okay, halacha l'maaseh, 90% of our tefillin are made by a machine and known as and it's kosher. However, if there are chumras, different degrees of chumras, where it's called avodas yad batim. Called avodas yad. You want a chumra? Oh, avodas yad. Oh, you're going to pay for this. You're going to pay another $200, which means it's not. Avodas yad means that they're using different. They're using electrical tools. There's no question about it. They're using hydraulics, but there's much. I don't know the details. There's much more involvement on the part of the sofer, on the part of the batim macher, than just pure machine. So then there's what they call avodas regel. Okay, this is not a real term. This is not a halachic term. This is a colloquial term. It's been invented by the machers. Avodas regel. There's nothing plugged into the wall. They pedal. They pedal with their feet. They pedal with their feet, and these are very sophisticated pedals, because it has to create enough pressure that you can create a quality product. Because you're not going to be able to create the amount of pressure that you can accomplish through hydraulics, through electricity, whatever you're using. But they do it by foot completely. There's no electricity whatsoever. Avodas regel, every part of the ribua, of the making the tefillin square, perfectly square, is done by human labor, human power, l'shem kedushas tefillin.
Use water power,
wouldn't you do it? Water power is like a machine. In fact, the matzah, some of the old matzah machines, the first matzah machines were run by water. There was a water mill. There were mills, and that's one of the big problems. The water from the that provided the power would get mixed into the flour and make a chometz.
Right. No. So the big rabbanim who make their own
kemach. Yeah.
So they don't use a hand wheel instead of using the
water. And these are all different dargos.
It's different reason because they think
the water is going to make it chametz.
No, not because of the water, because
it's cold.
The speed of the friction
cause the heat.
So they have to use
something small, shouldn't
like
make chametz.
These
are all chametz. Okay, but this is the first issue. Is it done what they call factory? They don't even call it machine. They call it factory, because even the people who do avodas siyad are also using machines. The only difference is when avodas siyad means there's a person that's operating the machine. The person operating the machine and sanding it and applying pressure and all so it's being done by a human being. That's called avodas yad, as opposed to factory-made batim, which are a lot cheaper and are not as precise. And then there's something called avodas regel, which is extremely expensive, which means every single part of the ribua was done by a human being with his own hands and his own labor. Okay, that's as far as the three different matters: factory, avodas yad, avodas regel. Period. Now let's discuss the most important part of the tefillin, which most people don't even realize is the most important part, which can make the tefillin puzzle. It's not the most important part of the tefillin, but it's the part of the tefillin which can make the batim puzzle, and that is the shin. Halacha l'moshe b'sina, the tefillin requires a double shin. The shin on the right, shin on the left. The shin on the right has three heads. The shin on the left has four heads. That shin has to be applied. It's embossed from inside the folds of the hide of the batim, but it has to be done through a maisa kisiva, not through a maisa of choch toiches. We all know that in a sefer Torah tefillin mezuzah, if you have a blotch of ink, and you scratch out the outside of the letter, and you're left with a perfect letter, that letter is, even though it looks perfect to the eye, it is 100% puzzle. Every single letter in Stam must be written, must be applied through a Maisa Kisiva. Now, how do you emboss a shin through a Maisa Kisiva? Well, theoretically, this is how it was done when we had Dakos, before we had Gassos, when they used to make tefillin from the hides of very thin animals. It wasn't such a big deal. You would take a tweezers, and you would push the tweezers against the hide of this thin skin of the daka, of behemoth daka, and you would very delicately form this shape of a shin by taking the tweezers and forming the tsur of a shin. It wasn't any big deal. You actually pulled out a shin from the hide. That's a maisa ksiva. I'm not going carving around the end. I'm actually forming the letter shin. So there was no issue whatsoever. But now that we don't any longer make tefillin from a behemoth daka, we make them from behemoth gasa. You can sit with your tweezers the whole day, for years, and try to go make a shin by taking tweezers and pressing against the heart of a behemoth gasa that's been hardened and pressurized into making the ribua. And there's no way you'll budge. You won't even get even a teeny mashu to make a shin. So there's only one way to make a shin. Only one way, and the only one way is inside the two corners, they put in a plate. They put in a plate that has an embossed shin, and they push it in, and they take another machine, and they put enormous pressure, whether it's through hydraulics, electricity, or through its regel, a pressure, and the pressure of that embossed metal shin will force the shin to pop out on the other side. Is this called the Maisa Ksiva? L'chol hadeyas no. Every single pasuk will tell you, you do this, it's all not possible. And we do this. And so the moment gets scared. This is what you do. You put the plate in, inside, anything, inside the, that bias. You put the plate in, and you put enormous pressure to get it to pop out. You have now formed the shin, and that shin is called the chokak. You have etched. It's not called the kosaf. You did not write it from the front. You forced it out by basically applying pressure to the part that's not the shin. That's how you do it. You're pressing in. You're pressing in. And by pressing in, you're pressing on the outside of the letter against the plate that's causing the inside of the letter to pop out. That's similar to a maisa of the chokak, and it's 100% possible. Okay, pasul legami. So what are you going to do? How are you going to? There's no way you can have gasas and have a kosher shin, a kosher shin, unless you employ this method. So this is what everyone does. B'liyotzim naklal. You first take the plates, you put them in, you apply pressure, and you make a pasul a shin. Then you take a hammer, and you bang it back in. You bang it back in all the way. You got to zetz it in all the way, on both sides. And now, after I've zested all the way, I've softened it up, because I already pushed it all the way. I pushed it out. Now you can take the tweezers and you can pull it out once again. And this is the most dangerous part of making the batim, because all the paiskim say, if chas v'shalom, the sofer does not fully push the shin in all the way to the point where it's mamish, like the palm of your hand, it's still called a shin. It's still a shin. And now when they're going to enhance it by pulling it out all the way, they're not really doing a new maisa ksiva. Since you never push the shin in, you only push the shin in 95%, and 5% of the shin is still on the surface, that in halacha is still called a shin that exists, that was not produced through a maisa ksiva. That was produced through a maisa hakika, through pressuring the sides to produce. Now when you're just enhancing it by pulling it out, you're not accomplishing anything. You're enhancing something which is puzzle. The only way to make a kosher is it has to be pushed in 100%. And you'll never know. You can have a pair of tefillin that's gorgeous, it's stunning, and you can wear your entire life, and you'll never know that when this shin was made, it was not pushed in 100%, it was only pushed in 95%. You'll never know this your entire life.
Is the shin in where it's ribua, or it can be...
The shin, no, I don't think it makes a difference. I do not believe it makes a difference. The shin can be before.
And it's usually before, because
they're still polishing it up. With the ribua until the very end.
Even after the shin.
They have to let it dry.
The way to do it is while the skins are still moist, and not hardened.
They have to have a lot of precision. You have to know in advance where it's going to come out. It's a lot of computer precision. It's a lot of precision. They do soften up. They have chemicals. They do soften up. They have all every
suffer.
No, every suffer has trademark secrets of how they soften, how they press. And I'll tell you later on. There's a whole new technique going on today. He spoke about this. That he has the cutting edge. This is the inside stam. Inside everything I'm telling you is from inside stam by Mendelwitz, Ruvain Mendelwitz. So he's a very big seminary teacher. So this is something that requires when you're getting a hechsher, buy a pair of tefillin. You really want, it looks wow. You know, you go to Bat Machas and you see wow. You know, these tefillin, they look really really good. Why are they really charging you so much more money? Some of them, they all look the same. Well, supposedly, there are no guarantees for anything. Supposedly, when you have a very good hechsher, a very reliable hechsher, again, there are no guarantees. We all know there are always scandals. But these are the things, there are hidden things you'll never know about. And this is one of the hidden things. The hidden thing is, was there someone there really awake at the switch to make sure that is an assembly line, you know, you're dealing with, they're preparing hundreds of tefillin at a time, every single pair was mamish, the shin was pressed in all the way. Okay, that's issue number one. So that's a very big issue. Next issue, how do they pull out the shins? And this is cutting edge stuff, you're not going to see in Shulchan Aruch. There's a very big controversy. The way they traditionally pull out the shins, when you pull out the shins, sometimes some place can say that when you pull out the shin, you're doing it in a way that's no better than the press. If you pull out the shin, it's not so easy. It requires a lot of skill, talent, training. If you pull out the shin by pushing right underneath where the shin is, you're really doing again what the machine did. And you're not really doing, you're not doing a maisa ksiva. So there are techniques. He's supposed to, yeah, he shows pictures. I don't really, you have to see it illustrated and see it shown. It's not really describing it. But there are different techniques, and some are better and some are problematic. What came up now is a new technique. Someone invented a new technique. It's called the pin method, where they don't use any more screwdrivers. No more screwdrivers, because screwdrivers, L-shaped, they press, and if it presses in the wrong way, it's the chokak. They take pins, and they just follow the shin, along the shin, and they basically puncture. Not all the way, if you puncture all the way through, you make it puzzle, it's puzzle. But they make teeny little holes, and they pull through these teeny little pins, they're able to pull the shin out. It avoids a lot of the issues of the chokak by applying pressure. However, it creates its own set of issues. Because sometimes they're not careful, and they actually puncture the hide of the skin. And if you puncture the hide of the skin, it's 100% puzzle. It's puzzle. And no one's going to even know. You're not even able to tell, because when they sand it down, you'll never know there's a hole there.
Once you start a little pulling, could you push from the back?
I don't think so. Everything has to be pulled up originally. Up. Also, when they pull, they don't always succeed in pulling. You have to read the details. They don't always succeed in pulling it the right way. And there are gaps, and then when they finish it off, they don't finish it off in the right way. Again, you have to read it, and so you have to see it illustrated. It creates a set of its own problems.
You should be a vacuum.
So basically, there's no perfect solution. Whatever you do is no good. If you follow the traditional methods, okay, starting off with the press is for sure possible. But we have to do that because you're not going to get a shin out of gases. After you get it, you got to push it back inside. You got to make sure it's all the way back inside. Now you got to pull it out again. Pulling it out again, there are different techniques. There's the traditional technique, which probably everyone that we have here is, no one, I don't think anyone here has the pin method. This is something that's very, very new. Everyone has the old, but the old ones, a lot of people are complaining about, that you're not really doing much better than what was done originally with the machine, and it has to be done in a very certain way. And now came the new method, the pin method. The pin method theoretically is ideal, theoretically, but practically, unless a sofer really knows what he's doing, and he's not really, he's not doing a...
Vacuum forming is a very...
Okay, so this is one major issue. Let's go to another issue. Okay, let's go to another issue. Other issue of tefillin is the chut. The chutim that many people don't even realize that their tefillin, there are four compartments. You may not even realize that in between your four compartments, there is a piece of gid, there's a piece of sinew that is stitched. When they put your tefillin together, they put stitches in the batim achadazes. Not when they put the parashios in. There's a stitch that goes in between the three. There are four sections, so there are three gaps. In between, there are three. Can you see those chutim on the outside of your tefillin? If they're not there, the tefillin are puzzled. And the reason why they're there is those chutim guarantee that they're separate. And it must be the halacha l'moshe b'sinai. There must be a chut, a cord. A sinew that separates, doesn't stick out, that separates. So my tefillin, I can't see them. They're like most of the old tefillin, you can't see them. But l'chatchila, there is a hider, and you'll pay more money for this, is if you can actually see the chut on the outside. It requires a lot more precision, and the finishing is much more delicate, that you could actually see the chut on the outside. The more expensive tefillin that are sold, you look on the very base, you can actually see the chut between the three compartments. That's another chumrah.
It doesn't have to be
any shear. No shear, but you have to have the chut.
A thin hair coming out.
Not a thin hair. It's not a thin hair. It's the size of a stitch.
Yeah, but that's how it depends how thick you make the chut. You can have a very thin.
But it's very, very thin. The standard size. The chut is the standard size. It's the standard size.
The gidim.
The better, the more expensive batim, you can see the chutim on the outside. Okay, another very big issue is that the tefiros. Everything has to be. What about the stitches on the bottom? Turn the tefillin upside down. It's stitched together. It has to be stitched together. On the, it has to be perfectly square. Those stitches must, if they're not perfectly square, it's possible. On dakos, it's not etched. It's the stitches are on the surface. On gasos, the gas are thick, so they etch a line into the, they carve out in the hide a line in order that the chut goes inside. Problem is, on some of the tefillin, they're not made perfectly well, is the corners are not perfectly square. And they're perfectly, the corner is the perfect square, but when you stitch, the chutim are not touching each other. You have a big round circle, and you have a chut from here to here, and a chut from here to here, but being that it's a big circle, in the corners, the chutim are not touching each other. So, but the evidence kasha. But in a better, higher quality pair of tefillin, they're going to make the hole so small, they're guaranteed that the corners are crisp. The corners where the chutim, they touch each other on the corner, are crisp. You can what?
Make it thicker.
You can't. The chutim are standard size. There's not much you can do with the chut. I don't know. It's not so simple. It's not so simple. It's either it's good or it's no good. It's either way it is. This is another difference in the price and the quality. Okay, running out of time. Let's go another point. This is fascinating. Many people, you open up your tefillin. It's made out of one piece. Sometimes all the old tefillin are like this. When you stitch it up, you need a filler. You need a piece of material. Tefillin is mostly, the bottom is one bias. You have the top, and then there's the titura, and the mavarita comes around. And you stitch the bottom to the top. But sometimes the hide is not thick enough when it comes around to make a perfect square to fill it up. So all the old tefillin, they have inside another piece, in between the very, very bottom and the top, a piece of leather, perfectly square, a filler. It's called a filler piece. In order that when you stitch it, it should be perfectly square. So if you want to spend more money on your tefillin, you want to go up another notch, you buy tefillin, it's called miksha achas. Like the menorah, the menorah is called miksha achas. When they make the high, they make sure that that part of the hide is so thick, so when they'll turn it up to close it, it'll be one piece. They won't have to add another piece of miksha achas when they sell yudzvot. So let me read you what he says over here. This amazing thing. I don't know about my tefillin. I know my grandfather's tefillin had indeed this filler piece. So he writes over here about people today that it's a hiddur to buy miksha achas. So let me read you. Yes, yes, you definitely should. You should read this. You buy a pair of tefillin. It's available. Until he wrote this sefer, this sefer is unbelievable. Every so often in the news, I remember all the scandals. Every scandal he talks about is all. He goes through the whole issue. It's fantastic. So let me read. There is no halachic advantage to miksha achas batim. Okay, the truth is that their supposed superiority is one of the great myths of the tefillin purchasing process. Okay, it's a myth. It's a myth that having tefillin with miksha achas is any better than non-miksha achas. And he quotes here from all the gedolim. He goes through the whole end of time. He goes through the whole sugya from what all the gedolim Yisrael say about this. There's no such mass. If you see a pair of tefillin that has this filler, it's fine, perfectly fine. Today, for more money, they'll try to sell you the moon, Brooklyn Bridge. You don't want to buy it today when there's a lot of snow on it. But this is miksha achas. Okay, another very big issue is glue. Okay, glue. All of our tefillin have glue. Problem is glue. Glue is if debek yesh chibor. Once you have glue, how you have four different compartments on top? How in the world are they going to keep those four compartments together? Four compartments. Naturally, they're all bent. How are you going to keep them all together? The only way you're going to keep them together is glue. That's the way it is.
Crazy glue.
Yeah, though they have better. They have crazy glue is nothing compared to what they have. They have glue like you won't believe. They have glue that the world can stay together. This the real. But glue is it's a chibur. Glue is a chibur. It's no longer called four compartments. It's no longer called. If you have glue keeping the four compartments together and the glue is holding it together and glue is called a chibur, it's like one bias. It's till a puzzle. So putting in glue into your tefillin theoretically should disqualify the batim. So this is the big challenge. Probably this is the number one issue in tefillin. The number one issue in tefillin is glue. How much glue are they putting in the batim to keep the batim together? So b'diavad, most tefillin are like this. They glue it all the way to the top. That's the way it is. I'm telling you the fact. That's the fact. They put glue. The sloppy top, whatever. Okay, there's glue. So there's glue. Glue will hold. Will hold. It's not called a debek. It's not called a chibur. It's not a chibur, and it's okay. The more expensive batim, and it's already becoming pretty much the standard. And a new pair of batim is they only put a little bit of a very strong glue, and the makbid not to go more than halfway up, and lechatchila even only a third. They're very careful how much glue they put, and the glue should not go to the end. So at least on the top third of the bias, there should be no glue, and anything that's less than a third in halach is a miut. 51% is a roif. Okay, you don't want to do. You want to do less than roif. 49% is also good, but even better than less than a roif would be a miut. A miut is less than a third. So a lot of the seven today are trying to put in less than a third glue in your batim. So you put a teeny little glue. There's three parts that require glue. A little squeeze here, a little squeeze there, a little squeeze there. You don't let the glue go all the way to the surface. And you don't let it go up. And you press it, put it in the mold, they put it in their presses, and they glue it together. That is a very, very big hitter. Okay, in the news, there was a very big scandal. They started telling everyone that everyone saw this puzzle that 2-3 years ago, what's called the Charitzin Mizuyofen. What in the world are the Charitzin Mizuyofen? This was in the news, on the media, on all the websites. Kol Korei, everyone should get their tefillin checked. Go run to the sefer, your tefillin are probably puzzle. When you take the batim and you put them in the press to make them perfectly square, the four compartments in the Shul Rosh, they press it so hard and they use glue and who knows what, and they're sanding and they're pressing. When they finish the Shul Rosh, you can't even tell there are four compartments. It looks like a shel yacht because so much pressure and things ooze. There's mucus. There are things inside the skins of the gassos that ooze out. And when they sand it, what happened to my four batim? They're there. The four batim are definitely there. They're four different compartments. They're glued together, but in the polishing process. So the service, I can't sell this. I sell this. The look at me like I'm selling a shel yad for a shel rosh. So they take out a knife, and they put it in a machine, and they etch out what should be the four compartments, assuming that on the line that they etch is exactly where the charitzim are. Someone has discovered that in a significant number of tefillin, it's not there. That the charitz, by the way, the four compartments don't have to be the same size. One can be a little bit bigger, one can be a little bit smaller, one a little fatter, as long as together it's a perfect square. Then no one's makbid, each one of the four compartments should be perfectly the same. That doesn't make a difference. They can be different sizes, as long as the final result is a square. What?
You can't have a filler for the bottom?
For the one on top? No, not on top. Not on top. No, on top, I don't believe so. There's no such thing. But it doesn't have to be the same size. So they discovered that many of the batim, the charitzim, are not accurate. They have a great picture. It really shows you where they show you the where it really is and where the charitz. It's a charitz mizuyof. Mizuyof means a forge, a fake. It's a counterfeit. So many people, when they go to the sofer can very easily take a knife. And very quickly, they get a very fine blade, and they can right away see if the charitz is accurate. And some, this became a very big controversy, chalukei deis in Eretz Yisrael, among the big gedolim, big poskim, if you have tefillin, and the charitzim are mizuyof, is that possible? There are no makaris for this. This is new cutting edge shilas that never existed before. This is why you need Gedolei Yisrael. So let's say you'll discover that 60% of people wearing tefillin, they don't have the charitzim. Who's going to take it upon themselves to pass when everyone's still an apostle? But who can take it upon themselves to pass when everyone's still a kosher?
It's like a shel yad.
It does look like a shel yad because you have charitzim. It does not look. No, then it's possible for sure.
Why?
Because a shel yad. That's not a shel. Shel has the four. That's acceptable. I don't know the details. I don't know. It seems that if it does not have the charitzim, it's for sure possible.
But
you have charitzim mizuyofim. So this is...
Because he stands it.
Okay, this is a big issue. Okay, another big issue is that now he's discussing, they're doing now...
When you look at the shel rosh,
yeah,
front, you have threads coming...
Yeah, that's a seir here.
From the top.
Right, that's the halacha l'moshe seir. You have to have a little bit of the here of the gidim, a little bit of the here for the egel, zecha for the egel, the sitra achra. It's kabbalistic in Yom, it has to be there. If it's not there, it's a taka apostle. It has to be there. Okay, one other quick thing is, there's a new technique now. When they make tefillin today, they take a piece of hide and they fold it. They fold it and fold it. They do all these funny things in order to make it, to make the gassos with technology to make it into the shape. It's an amazing feat. I mean, it's unbelievable. You think an iPhone? An iPhone is amazing. The tefillin are even more amazing. The technology that has gone into make a modern pair of tefillin is probably equivalent, if not greater, than technology that now. I mean, you understand what I'm saying? Way ahead. That's not a joke. But the technology of making tefillin is not a volume. But the technology is always changing. And now they have new technology where they're able now. They make all these. A lot of people don't like the folds for two reasons. Number one, when you make all these folds, it develops cracks. There's always going to be cracks, and the paint's going to chip, and it's all because it's been compressed in an abnormal way to form this shape. That's number one. Number two, there are opinions, and we don't accept this lahalacha, that these folds in halacha have the status of a hole. I don't get this whole thing. But somehow, when you make too many folds, and the folds crack, halacha views the fold as a hole. And if there's a hole, it's possible. We don't accept that because no one's tefillin will be kosher then. It wouldn't be kosher. We wouldn't get off the first base with this psak. But now there's new technology where they're not folding. They're able to stretch. They're able to take the same piece of hide. I don't know how they do this. And they're able to stretch. And the result is there are no cracks. They need less glue, even no glue. There are no cracks, there are no folds. And even there are no folds, there's no issue of folds should be called a hole. It's not a shayla of having a hole in your tefillin. And it looks very nice. It looks very nice. So this is something which you write is relatively new. And some of them are unbelievable. But most of them don't come off the assembly line in such great shape. In other words, yatsa schoroi behefsed. It creates its own set of problems. When they stretch it, they can stretch it too much, and the stretching can make a hole. And also, when they sand it, they don't last as long because since they're stretching it, the leather becomes thinner. But they've compensated, they've figured out other ways. This is in the process, it's developing. He writes that this is something which is developing, and ultimately they're going to perfect it, and this is what's going to become the standard in 10 years from now. But right now it's still cutting edge, and therefore it's not they'll charge you a lot of money for it if you want to get these new cutting edge tefillin, but it's not necessarily at this point in time better. Okay, one of the very interesting things, this is an amazing thing, is this is a very big halachic issue with the parshios. The parshios must be the shalyat, must be in the bais. Now on the top of the bais there is the titura. The titura is the base. When you put the parashas into the tefillin, are the parashas allowed to dip? You don't see this underneath; it's all hidden from your eye. Do the parashas of the shalyat have to be all the way upstairs in the bias, or can a part of the parashas dip a little bit below into the lower bottom section? 95% of all the tefillin that we have today, probably everyone in this room, part of their parashas, but at least 10% of the parashas are dipping below the bias into the titura. So maybe it's possible. Maybe l'chatchilu the parasha should be only in the bais, and the shel rosh is always not a problem. The shel rosh it's only four lines of shel rosh each parasha, so it's always going to be on the top. Shel rosh is not a problem, but on the shel yad, all of our tefillin, part of the parasha dips below the bais and goes into the section of the titur, the base of the tefillin. Is that a hiddur? Is that the way it really should be? You know, traditional tefillin, Rashi and Tosfos, when they were dakos, it's not necessarily had that problem. These are new problems that we invented for ourselves with technology. You make yourself one problem, you make new problems. So that's the way it is. It's kosher l'chatchila. No one's gonna blink. But today, a new hiddur. You want to pay more money? You want to pay money. Money's not an issue. We can make batim that are slightly taller. The bias is slightly taller to get the hiddur, the that the entire parsha will be in the bias, not even a mashu of the parsha.
Write a smaller parsha.
Writing small is not necessarily a hidden, because writing smaller, you need the ksav. You compromise on the ksav. It's not worth it. It's dangerous. You don't want to compromise on the ksav. It's already small. It does it right. So these cases, just so if that's another hint. So basically, we've thrown out a whole list of various factory avodas yad, avodas regel, the ribua. Yeah, there are people always coming out with new ideas. You're right. And tall, the right place on the arm, it should be in the right makam. But basically, this is a summary of all the various hidurim that one can ask for, should know about when they buy a pair of tefillin. There's a factory, there is avodas yad, avodas regel, there is the square, the shin, the different ways of making the shin, the pin method, the ribua of the tefiros, the miksha achas. We just discussed the fitting into the parasha, fitting into the bias in the titura, and the big issue really is the glue and the charitzin and mizu yofim. Okay? Have a wonderful snowstorm. I'll see you in the shiur on the off tomorrow. There's no shiur tomorrow.